This is a meeting of the Title Setting Board pursuant to Article 40 of Title I, Colorado Revised Statutes. The date is May 7th, 2008. The time is 7:35 a.m. We're meeting in the Secretary of State's Blue Spruce Conference Room, 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. The Title Setting Board today consists of the following, at least initially. It's a little complicated. There's going to be some changes throughout the day, but initially the title board consists of the following three individuals. My name is Bill Hobbs. I'm Deputy Secretary of State, and I'm here on behalf of Secretary of State Mike Kaufman. To my left is Dan Carton, Deputy Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services. Mr. Carton is the designee of the Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, Charlie Pike. To my immediate right is Dan Domenico, Solicitor General, who represents Attorney General John Southers. Mr. Carton will be sitting as the director's designee for this morning's agenda, and then this afternoon, the designee of the Office of Legislative Legal Services is Sharon Eubanks, who is also Deputy Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services. Mr. Domenico, I believe, is going to be the Attorney General's representative for the first four agenda items this morning, items 1 through 4, and then also the first agenda item this afternoon, I believe. For the remaining measures, the Attorney General's designee will be Jeff Blue, Deputy Attorney General. To my far left is Maury Kanizer, Deputy Attorney General, who represents the Title Board. To my far right is Ceci Gomez from the Secretary of State's office. A few words about procedures. There are sign-up sheets on the table by the door for anybody who wishes to testify. Please do sign up if you wish to testify. There are basically three steps whenever the Title Board considers a measure for the first time. The first step is for the board members to make sure that they understand each proposal. So the first step is to give the board members an opportunity to ask questions of the proponents. Once the board members have had that opportunity to ask questions, then the second step is for the board to determine if it has jurisdiction to set a title, and that necessarily includes at least a determination as to whether the measure complies with the single subject requirement. And then third, if the board determines that it does have jurisdiction to set a title, then the board will use a staff-prepared draft for discussion purposes, and a copy of the staff draft for each measure is on the table by the door. I do want to emphasize that the board does not consider or discuss the merits of any proposal. We're only here for the purpose of title setting. I should make a couple of other announcements relating to the items on the agenda today. Number 89, which is a rehearing for a measure concerning attorney's fees, that has been withdrawn by the proponents. We also have received fiscal estimates from the Office of State Planning and Budgeting for measures number 86, 95, and 90 and 91, which I had requested the Office of State Planning and Budgeting to provide fiscal estimates for those measures. We also received revised fiscal estimates from OSBB for some measures that had been before the board at previous meetings, 68, 69, 70, 71, 78, and 88. And those will be posted on the Secretary of State's website. I believe all of those relate to severance taxes. With that, let's turn to the first agenda item, 2007-2008, number 97. Mr. Pink, I think you're the proponent. Let's see if the Title Board has any questions for you about the measure. If you'll come forward and identify yourself for the record, I'll find out if the board members have questions. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Paige Pank. I'm the proponent of What are we, 97 today?
97, that's right. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm here on behalf of myself and Roberto Abad, Joseph Acevedo, Ramon Acevedo Ponte, Michael Aiklin II, Gennaro Acosta, Stephen Acosta, James L. Adair, James F. Adamowski, Algernon Adams, Brandon E. Adams, Brent A. Adams.
Mr. Pink, excuse me for interrupting, but you have another designated representative, so if you don't mind, I'd like to go ahead and just start with the questions, if that's all right.
Well, you know, actually, I do mind, because every time I've come to the title board before, they've always asked me who else I represent. And today, I'm telling you who else I represent.
It's really not relevant. If we've asked you that before, I don't think that's really something the title board should inquire about.
Oh, okay. Well, see, I'm just curious about a couple things here before we get any further in this. First of all, your procedures change every time I come here. Sometimes you read the whole measure, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you have an attorney sitting here, and sometimes you don't. So I'm just trying to figure out what your procedures are. And then when we get done with that subject, the second subject I want to get into is, how did you figure out I had to be here at 7:30 a.m.? And then, I'm sorry, what time did you say that this meeting started? Because I
said 7:35.
Oh, okay, because I thought you said 7:30, but maybe I was mistaken, because it was 7:35, but okay. How did it come up that I had to be here at 7:30? Because I'm not like a morning person or anything. And could you just explain your procedures for how you picked, you know, what got where?
We have a long agenda, so we start based on how long the agenda is. We have a long agenda, so we set the agenda to start at 7:30.
So. Yeah, no, I got that. I see. How many proposals you have today?
You have the agenda.
There's a whole bunch of, like, you got 12 or 15 or, mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm trying to figure out, I understand the 7:30 start time, I'm trying to figure out how I got into the number one slot at the 7:30 a.m., which wasn't even 7:30 a.m., it was 7:35, and we had a quorum at 7:30, but you didn't want to go ahead, but that's your
We're ready to go forward now. If we could go ahead, you know, I have explained the procedures, and I'd like
But you didn't explain that procedure about how I ended up first this morning, now did you?
It's based on a combination of subject matter and time of filing.
Okay, that's fine. Could you explain to me what your matrices are for doing that? Because you say subject matter, I mean, is it like, does it the subject begin with A and then Z, or how do you pick that? Because you guys, frankly, Mr. Hobbs, you're confusing to me. I mean, you're bewildering, because, you know, one other thing you didn't mention is about this being broadcast live. Is it being broadcast live?
It's both being recorded and broadcast live, that's correct.
Oh, how would I have any way to verify that this is actually being broadcast live?
The recording will be available on the Secretary of State's website.
No, I mean, how would I know that this is being broadcast live right now?
I'm not sure. I mean, you may see what's on the screen right now. That's relating to the software
that's
that
like a computer picture. I don't know what that means.
Well, Mr. Pink, we do need to move on. We have a long agenda. I'd like to turn to board questions to make sure we understand your proposal.
Hold on a sec here.
Mr. Pink, we did not start at 7:30, but we've got some time to make up here.
That's actually fine that we didn't start at 7:30.
So could we go ahead and move on to questions?
Here's the thing.
Could we go ahead and move on to questions, Mr. Pink?
You said to me that I couldn't read the names of the dead from the quote-unquote long war on terror because they're not here. Speak for themselves, and that's why
Mr. Pink,
here.
As I explained, we're not concerned with the merits of the proposal. We just simply want to set titles.
I understand that.
We have to understand the measure. We do this for each measure before us, and so I'd like to make sure we understand the measure. Would you give the board an opportunity to ask questions about the measure?
Well, can we just hold on for a second here? Because I'm still confused about your procedures. Because every time they're different. And here's what I'm curious about. I'm wondering if you're feeling okay this morning. And I'm wondering if the rest of the board members are feeling okay this morning. That's what I'm curious about. Because in the last four or five times I've come here, you have never had the same procedure. So then I start to wonder, is Mr. Hobbs drinking in the morning? Are you on some type of psychiatric medication that you're not taking? Because you're making me afraid as a person with bipolar illness about what I'm supposed to expect from you.
Okay, okay? Well, as I explained, there's three steps to the process.
Yeah, I understand.
I'd like
about
to begin the first
steps.
Step. This okay. is what we do for every measure.
Why don't we get to that first step?
First step is to ask you questions about the proposal.
Do you mind if I get a drink of water?
Go ahead.
Thank you, sir.
While you're doing that, let's go ahead and see if the board members have questions. And I guess I do have one I'd like to go ahead and start with. The measure that you brought before us...
Sir, I'm sorry. Under what authority, and I'm asking you a legal question, and you have Mr. Kneiser here, and you have Mr. Domenico also. What authority do you have to tell me that I can't read the names of the people I'm here on behalf of? Because I'll tell you what, I've read Article 2, Section 1 of the Colorado Constitution. And what it says, and this leads into whether or not you're going to set a title today, is the people have the authority. Am I right on that, Mr. Kneiser? Would you like to get out a copy of Article 2, Section 1? Because we need to get this issue resolved. Not only over over your power to
Mr.
set
Pink,
the title.
Will you let us proceed with title setting?
Could you give me your legal authority for the actions you've done so far?
In Article 5, Section 1, and Section 1-40-101, and the following sections.
Could you
sections.
Say Article 2, Section 1 just once?
The initiative process and the process that we're following is set out in Article 5, Section 1.
And what about Article 2, Section 1 of the Colorado Constitution?
Mr. Pink, we're really needing to move on with the agenda. And if we're going to set a title for your measure this morning, I need to provide an opportunity for the board to make sure they
That's
understand
fine.
The proposal.
That's fine.
Can we ask you
questions about your proposal?
I'd still like you to reference Article 2, Section 1. And you tell me what authority you came up with to tell me that I can't read the names of the dead of our long war on terror. Because this relates into whether or not you have the authority to set a title, whether or not you're going to set a title, whatever you want to do. That's all I'm trying to figure out is where do you think you get your legal authority from, sir?
From Section 1-40-106, which
and
is...
And you know where I get mine from? Section... Article 2, Section 1 of the Colorado Constitution. Now, could you ask one of your lawyers which one is more important?
Not going to have a debate about it. I would like to proceed with title setting, if you'll let us. And
do I have a choice in the matter?
I will say that it's out of order to debate issues that don't relate to title setting. Yes,
okay.
those things are out of order.
Okay, so you're making a ruling that I'm out of order and trying to discuss where you get your legal authority from?
That's correct.
Okay. Well,
may we ask you questions about your measure?
I guess since you're not going to let me honor these people who aren't here today, I don't have much choice now, do I?
Okay, then let me ask you the first question that I'd like to ask.
It's not okay, but I can't do anything about it.
The first question I'd like to ask you is about the language of the proposal itself. It's in the form of a question. All of the other proposals that I can recall that have come before us have been in the form of statements.
Well, you have a very short memory then, and that makes me more concerned about you because I have brought you questions, ballot titles in the form of questions before. So now I'm worried about your mental health because are you having memory problems?
May I finish with my question?
Your assumption of the question is wrong.
Your measure is in the form of a question. Is that correct? In the form of a question?
You just told me you'd never seen a question presented like this before.
I don't think I have, but it's really not relevant whether I have or whether I haven't. I'd like to ask you about the form of your proposal.
Okay.
It's in the form of a question.
Nothing seems to be relevant, but go on.
It's in the form of a question. Is this the language that you intend to become a part of the Constitution?
Okay, I need to get a copy of this. could you read what your copy is to make sure that we have the exact same language here? Is that, that's not out of order, is it?
It's pretty short. We don't normally read the full text, but it
again,
says...
Again, that's not true either.
I said we don't usually read the full
okay.
text. Be it enacted by the people of the state of Colorado, shall there be a sex strike by the women only on January 1st, 2009, for one day in length in support of the wives and parents of U.S. combat troops receiving pay for support services rendered to the military through an amendment to the Colorado Constitution, ? Is that your proposal?
That's what I turned into them.
Is that the language?
Which that you intend to put into the Constitution?
Well, I don't know. That's a really interesting question. And what do you think I should do?
I'm just asking you what your intent is.
Oh, well, I'm trying to get some wisdom from you people here today. So you tell me, having been here all these years and, you know, telling me all this stuff about the initiatives, what do you guys think it should say?
Well, we don't draft measures for proponents. I
didn't ask you to draft this one. The only thing I was asking you to do is, do you think this would be good language for the Constitution, Mr. Kneiser? What do you think?
We're not trying to figure out if it's good language for the Constitution. My question is whether you intend to put this question in the Constitution.
Oh, yeah, okay. And I'm asking you, do you think this is something that would be good in the Constitution?
Is it your intention to put this question in the Constitution? It's your measure. I'm just asking you what your intention is.
Well, see, maybe I'm not understanding you correctly. Could you repeat that question, please?
Is it your intention to put this question in the Constitution? The question that I just read.
Well, this is something I don't understand. Can I... And I'm asking you this legitimately because I've been coming here for a while. How much flexibility do I have at this point as far as this is concerned?
As far as the language of the proposal?
The language of the draft that I gave you. Can you chop that stuff out, or can your staff chop that out?
No, neither we nor you can change the language of the proposal today. This
right.
is what you submitted to the Secretary
of State.
Yeah, I understand,
but then the next step is you pick language that I would give on a sheet to somebody.
We just set titles. We don't change the language of proposals.
Well, okay, I see. Then no. This is, I want to keep this proposal, and
okay.
we'll see what as far as the answer to your question was. We'll see what the title board came up with as their version of this.
We don't do versions of proposals. We just set titles.
No, I know the title. That's what I'm trying to figure out. Is the title that what goes in the Constitution, or is that just
no?
Okay.
No, it's the language. It is the language of your proposal. I'm just trying to make sure that you intend this question to actually go into the Constitution.
Yeah. Why don't we just say yes to that?
Okay.
I don't know that I have other questions.
Are you feeling okay, Mr. Domenico?
Are there other questions by members of the title board?
No questions.
Pardon?
No, you've answered.
Okay. Thank
my
you.
Question.
Then let's. Thank you, Mr. Fink. I don't have anybody else signed up to testify, so I'll move on to the second step, which is consideration of whether the board has jurisdiction to set a title. And as I indicated before, that includes the question of whether the measure is a single subject. Any discussion by the board? Mr. Carton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that that your question and Mr. Penk's answer focused in on the issue that I had, and that is specifically that it appears that the measure would add a question to some part of the Constitution. And so what I'm struggling with as far as a jurisdictional standpoint goes is what exactly the amendment or the measure is here, since it's a question rather than a statement or a directive or a set of principles. It doesn't contemplate any action, but presumably seeks to add a question to the Constitution. And I look at Article 5, Section 1, Subsection 1, the language that says, the people reserve to themselves the power to prepare laws and amendments to the Constitution, laws and amendments. Subsection 2 contemplates proposing a measure, any measure, by a petition. So we're talking about laws, amendments, and measures. Section 140 102 subsection 1 defines a ballot issue as a citizen-initiated petition. 140.106.1 provides, as far as the title board's responsibility, that for ballot issues, the title board by majority vote shall proceed to designate and fix a fair title for each proposed law or constitutional amendment. And I think ordinarily we look at what are the central features of the measure or the proposed law. And the issue that I'm having is that I don't see here a proposed law or measure. Again, it looks as if the proponent would like a title set for a question rather than an actual measure. And I think that that may be beyond the purview of this body. One of the cases say the ballot title
shall... Which case?
Excuse me?
Which case?
I'll read you the citation in a moment, Mr.
Thank
Pank.
You.
Please give him a chance to finish.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I got up early this morning and...
Okay, Mr. Carton.
I'm a morning person.
Ballot,
please go on.
The ballot title shall correctly and fairly express the true intent and meaning of the proposed measure and shall unambiguously state the principle of the provision sought to be added. That's NRA Proposed Initiative for 1999-2000, number 29. So again, I look at the dictionary definition of a law, it's a rule or method according to which phenomena or actions coexist or follow each other. Law, in its general generic sense, is a body of rules of action or conduct prescribed by a controlling authority and having binding legal force. And so at this stage of the proceedings, I don't feel personally that the title board has jurisdiction to set a title for this proposal, because under the relevant constitutional provisions, statutory provisions, and precedent, I'm not finding a measure, a law, or a proposed amendment for the Constitution. Thank you.
Further discussion by the board? Go ahead, Mr. Dementia.
I don't have the same problem. It seems to me if the people want to frame their measure as a question, and what impact that would have seems to me to be a question for the courts that doesn't really affect our jurisdiction. There's a measure here. I don't know what, given that it's written as a question, I don't know that it would end up having any binding effect on anyone, but that seems not to be our problem to me. And so it seems to be one of those things where we can set a title that accurately reflects what's going on, which is that there's a proposed amendment concerning a sex strike, and let whatever impact the form of the measure takes be played out as it's as it goes forward. I mean, I don't see anything in our authority that says we can't set something if we don't think it has a binding impact on the law. I mean, we can understand what it is. It's a question. What the fact that it's a question, what the impact of its form as a question has, doesn't really seems to me concern us. So I would find that it's a single subject as that's defined under our authority. Whether it exceeds the authority of the people to propose measures is another legal question that I don't think it's ours to answer.
Well, and I actually haven't made up my mind yet. I'm kind of torn between some considerations that Mr. Carton mentioned and actually kind of agreeing with both Mr. Carton and Mr. Domenico. I started out trying to look at this in terms of, like Mr. Carton mentioned, but I'll state it a little differently, but I think it's a similar inquiry. Is this something that can be characterized as an initiative? In other words, to me that means, is it legislative in character? The initiative process is found in Article 5, Section 1, which begins by delegating legislative power to the General Assembly and then reserving the right of initiative to the people. And as Mr. Carton pointed out, the succeeding language, the following language, makes it clear that the right of initiative relates to legislation and legislation that takes the form of either legislation in the sense of statutory law or amendments to the Constitution. So legislation in the sense of the things that are could be made the subject of legislation or constitutional amendments. And in thinking about precedent, have we ever had a situation where where there was something that was not an initiative in front of us? And I can think of maybe at least one example, but although it's not a real good analogy to this situation, but it was a number of years ago when an initiative was presented to the title board that involved a what essentially was a county initiative dealing with an issue in Mesa County. And I think, I don't remember the factual background very clearly, but I think it was submitted to the title board for title setting because there was no county process for setting a title for a county initiative. And the title board in that case found that it did not have jurisdiction to set a title over a local ballot measure. And it was something that may very well have been legislative, but the title board found that it did not have jurisdiction to set a title because it wasn't a state initiative. I don't know if that was appealed. I'm sure it was not overturned in any event, so it's not great precedent, but it's the closest analogy that I could think of. At least that part of the inquiry, is this legislative in character, is still something that I've kind of struggled with and gone back and forth about. I think it's conceivable that there are proposals submitted to the title board that are not legislative. There is some case law that makes the distinction between legislative and administrative matters. If this were an administrative matter, then I might be able to rely on that case law, but I don't think it's that, really, probably. I've sort of come to think that it may be legislative in character. Referring to some of the things that I think, some of the considerations that Mr. Carton was considering, it may not be regulatory or have any effect whatsoever, but it may be that it's the kind of thing a legislature might do. They might call for a strike. I'm not sure. So I'm sort of leaning towards thinking that it may be legislative in character and that it's statewide and therefore it may be an initiative, but it's that kind of leads into the next part of my concern, is that I'm not sure I understand it well enough to set a title. We do have plenty of precedent that says if the title board cannot understand a measure well enough to determine the single subject, then it cannot set a title. I think Mr. Domenico points out that the single subject could be sex strike. In a sense, that's tempting as the subject. It's just that I don't know what the measure is really about.
It's about respect.
Please let me finish, please, Mr. Pink. It by putting this question in the Constitution, shall there be a strike, through an amendment to the Colorado Constitution, and putting that language in the Constitution, shall there be a strike through an amendment to the Constitution, I'm not sure I know what it does, or whether it does anything or whether it does multiple things. And if it does multiple things, it could be a single subject violation. I guess I'm sort of stuck on that part of the inquiry that we have sometimes, is we have to understand a measure well enough to determine the single subject and fairly set titles. And I'm not sure that I understand that well enough. One thing that Mr. Pink mentioned, which resolved one of my concerns, was I wasn't sure whether this was the text of the proposal or whether this was intended to be the ballot title. And I think the statutory process makes it pretty clear that what is to be submitted to the title board is the text of the measure, and it specifically says without any ballot title. But Mr. Pink says this really is intended to be the text of his measure. So I'm comfortable that, you know, that this is the text, and then we can, you know, if we can get past the jurisdictional issue, we can set titles. But I'm really just kind of struggling with what does it mean? You know, what would I describe the meaning of this? And Mr. Pink will give you a brief opportunity to answer that inquiry.
Yeah, thanks. Well, okay, maybe it wasn't like the best written proposal you've ever seen over the years, but, you know, I didn't have a lot of time to think about it and get it all written up and get it over the Capitol and everything. So, yeah, it's not perfect. I would like to give Mr. Domenico kudos for sort of touching on the issue. Is just because you don't understand it fully and maybe it wasn't written perfectly clearly doesn't mean that you can't present a question in the Constitution. And in fact, I think that that's really the heart of the matter, because I was over at Legislative Review and Comment the other day, and they were like, well, this mandates a sex strike. And it's like, no, it's nothing of the sort. This is giving respect, which is the single subject of this proposal, to the women. And it asks them what they want. It's like I wanted you to ask me questions about what's going on here so I have a chance to react. I know it's not going to go beyond this room. But let's have some respect for the women and the mothers who provided all the support for these now dead people, and say, look, what do you want to do?
Mr. Pink, what would you describe the single subject to
respect.
Be?
Respect. That's exactly what it's about. Is it poorly written? I don't know. I guess you had to put somewhere that you were going to change the Constitution in there. I'm a little confused. Honestly, I'm telling you, aren't you supposed to have somewhere that you're going to change the Constitution in your ballot question that you submit? And if I got that wrong, then, you know, I'm sorry, we'll have to go with this and just put this into the Constitution. But this is about asking the women what they want. Because I'll just tell you briefly, I know you don't have a lot of time, you're going to be here late anyway, I'm real sorry about that. I'm trying to finish my master's degree up over at University of Colorado Denver in urban and regional planning. And I'm taking this class, it's sort of informally to try to make it up, and we're talking about sample size. And I mean, me personally, you guys say you need two people to have a quorum. Okay, well, then we get three here. I think we should have a bigger sample size about what's going on in the world than what we got right now. And that means asking the women respectfully what they want. Because I don't really care what the men think anymore, because I already know what their answer is. And their answer is, well, we're just going to keep things exactly the same way outside of this room, of course, that we've been doing. And all these people whose name I mentioned at the beginning, and I wanted to read the rest of them, but you wouldn't let me, I understand that, they're not here to speak for themselves. And you know what? Somebody needs to start asking the women about what they want. Mr. Domenico hit it right on the head.
He said the single subject was, I think he said, a sex strike by women. Would you agree that that's the single subject of the measure?
No. The single subject is respect for women by doing what Mr. Domenico wanted, which was putting a question in. Because I don't mandate to any woman or anybody what they should be doing, especially in the bedroom, okay? So I would appreciate it if you, like Mr. Domenico, have the same respect and come forward and give that power to the women to let them decide, because that's what this is about. Sex strike is the method for achieving the single subject of respect. And I'll tell you something, Mr. Hobbs, nothing personal. I know you're busy, but you didn't have the respect for the names of the people to let me finish them. So how about when it comes time to vote, you give me your vote for the respect for the people who you never ask about and that's the women.
Okay. Is there further discussion by the board? Is there a motion?
I move that the measure meets the single subject requirement and that we find jurisdiction and move to setting the title.
I'm going to go ahead and second that. I really have reservations about it simply because I think it is very confusing, but I also think the board has an obligation to give the benefit of proponents, and in this case I think that's exactly what I'm going to do. So is there any further discussion by the board? If not, all those in favor of the motion to find that the board has jurisdiction to set a title, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no.
No.
That motion carries 2-1. Then we'll go to step three. The staff prepared drafts. Ms. Gomez has displayed them on the screen in the room. Mr. Pink, any comment about the staff draft of the titles?
Once again, just put the closest the way that I wrote it. Just put "shall there be sex strike" right up front. I know we've had this discussion before. We're not going to take really a lot of time about it. I just want it noted to the board that you need to put the sex strike part by the women right up front. Okay, that's my point on that. My objection's been made. I hope you note it and go forward from there.
Thank you. Again, I don't have anybody else signed up to testify. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on this item? If not, then I'll turn to board discussion. Any discussion by the board?
Mr. Chairman, I just for the record, since I was a no on the jurisdictional issue, I'm going to be a no on the title, too. I just wanted to put that on the record. Okay. And it may be perfectly suitable as far as the language of the measure goes, but I will be a no.
Okay. Any further discussion?
I think it's fine as it is. I think it could be perhaps to capture some of the concerns that have been expressed instead of saying an amendment to the Constitution concerning a sex strike. It could say something like an amendment to the Constitution asking whether there should be a sex strike to sort of capture the idea that it's framed as a question and may not necessarily be mandatory. But I think it's also okay written sort of more broadly as it is.
And I think it, you know, again, we have to clearly state the single subject. I think it's probably good. I agree that maybe the fact that it's in the form of a question, well, it's not captured there, but I think it's probably, to me, is sufficient. But
well, then I move then that we adopt the staff draft without amendment.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no.
No.
That motion carries 2-1. That concludes action on number 97. The time is 8:14 a.m. Thank you. Let's go on to the next agenda item. This is 2007-2008 number 82, discrimination, preferential treatment by Colorado governments. This is before us on a motion for rehearing. So if we could hear from a representative of the for the motion for rehearing, which, if you'll come forward and identify yourself for the record, please.
My name is Aaron Solomon from Hale Friesen on behalf of the objector.
We have the benefit of the brief. Is there anything you want to highlight, or I'll give you an opportunity if you want to emphasize some of the points?
I think just briefly, with regard to this issue of single subject, this is a measure that really encompasses three different subjects. It seeks to express opposition to discrimination and preferential treatment. It seeks to constitutionalize and clarify certain existing prohibitions, and it also seeks to preserve the authority of the state to continue certain current programs. And these are really three different things that the measure is trying to do, and that shows up in the language, and the measure really has a very broad opening sentence coupled with very narrow definitions that follow it, and I think the result is a measure that doesn't comply with the single subject requirements. With respect to title, I think that the title fails to clearly distinguish between this initiative and Initiative 31. The title board is responsible for clearly distinguishing between competing initiatives. In this case, the title set are extremely similar and don't make it clear to the voters that Initiative 82 is designed to constitutionalize and clarify existing laws and to preserve the authority of the state in certain areas.
Thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Solomon? I think one thing I wanted to focus on just a little bit was, top of page 2, the paragraph at the top of page 2 of the motion. I just wanted to explore this a little bit. I mean, the heart of it to me was that the statement that preferential treatment is generally understood to include more than, quote, adopting quotas or awarding points. And I guess, I mean, this to me, this is an important point because while there may be, well, and I think the latter part of this paragraph points out, there may be problems with definitions that are, as described in the motion, too artificial. I mean, saying dog means cat or dog includes cat or something like that. It really didn't strike me that the definition of preferential treatment in the measure was of that nature. It seemed like that was a reasonable definition of preferential treatment, maybe a limiting one, but not one that would somehow go beyond the line of what I think a reasonable definition might say. And I don't mean reasonableness, and I'm not evaluating, and I'm just saying if it seems like the proponents can define that to be preferential treatment. But perhaps you could help me understand that a little better.
Well, I actually think you articulated it very well, and I think it is a question of where that line is, of where you cross the line between definition that is clarifying, albeit limiting, and a definition that is so artificially narrow or so constrained that it really sort of changes the meaning of the word that you're attempting to define. And the case that was cited at the end of the paragraph, the dog means cat example, is a sort of extreme example of that. And I think the question for the board is, where on the line does the definition in the proposed initiative fall? Is it one that is legitimately clarifying, or is it one that is overly narrow? And my opinion is that it's one that is overly narrow, that falls on the wrong side of that line, because it picks out such extraordinarily small pieces of a very broad phrase and eliminates the remaining swath of potential application. But I think that you articulated the question for the board very well.
Okay. Mr. Domenico?
Well, the problem I have with applying the dog-cat case is that isn't this situation closer to what that court said would be the better situation, which is, I mean, obviously if you said dog means cat, if you say we are going to protect all dogs, and then in the second sentence you say dogs is defined to mean cat, then obviously you've got a serious problem. Whereas the court says if it says we'll protect an animal, and an animal here means a dog, then that's not a problem. And here you're saying it's not that the two necessary, not that the items in the first, the set of items in the first sentence don't include the part in the second as dog and cat would, but that you've got a broad subject like animals or preferential treatment, and then in the second sentence you've got a narrow subset of that rather than something that's inherently in conflict with it, right? Do you see what I'm saying? Now, I obviously still have real problems with this, because I do think that if someone came into us with a measure trying to clarify existing law that said something about no one shall keep an animal as a pet, and then that law was causing all sorts of problems, and they came in and said, we need to narrow the definition of animal. And so they said, animal for purposes of this provision only includes tigers or something like that. So they're trying to narrow an existing definition, then I think there's no problem. The problem you've got here is, it seems to me a little bit different than saying dog and cat. It's that in the same measure you're trying to enact the broad, no one shall keep an animal as a pet, and a narrow, oh, but when we say animal, we only mean tiger, right? And I wonder if your analysis really gives us the authority under those circumstances, which I think are different than the dog versus cat definition, to withhold our jurisdiction. And is it just, to me, the only way to do that is under the surreptitious or confusing language, not necessarily under the inherently conflicting language. Is that, I mean, do you think these necessarily conflict with each other, are really two totally separate subjects, or just that the way that they're presented here is confusing in such a way that it hides one of the subjects?
Well, with regard to the definitional issue, I don't think that there's a conflict. I think that there's an artificial narrowness that hides the effect of the measure. And I think that's the real issue with the definitional language, in my opinion, is that by narrowing so deeply the meaning of the broad terms used, that you have a measure that is very difficult to understand without a careful reading of the definitional language. And if one were not to read and understand the definitional language, reading the first sentence of the measure could give you a very different flavor or a different sense of what the effect of the measure would be.
Any other questions for Mr. Solomon? Mr. Carton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Solomon, I think this is kind of in the same vein. On page 6 of the motion, under heading B, you assert that the proposed initiative number 82 limits the term preferential treatment to, and then the language of the initiative. In contrast, proposed initiative number 31 would apply to the full range of preferential treatment, and this goes to the ballot title itself. And then your assertion is that the ballot title for proposed number 82 must make it clear to voters that proposed initiative number 82 is intended to apply only to a small subset of preferential treatment, while proposed initiative number 31 applies to all preferential treatment. And I guess I have two questions. The first is that the title set for 82 specifies in the language that defining preferential treatment to mean adopting quotas or awarding points solely on the basis of race, sex, color, ethnicity, or national origin. That is language that is distinct from the title of measure number 31. My question is it your position that particular language in number 82 is insufficient to distinguish 82 from 31? And the second question I have is just generally, and what's the legal basis for the assertion that 82 must make it clear to the voters that it's intended to apply only to a small subset?
Well, I guess to answer your second question first, the legal basis is the statutory requirement, and this is section 140 1063B, the requirement that ballot titles shall not conflict with those selected for any previous petition filed for the same election. And then a Colorado Supreme Court case interpreting that, in which the court says what is prohibited are conflicting ballot titles which fail to distinguish between overlapping or conflicting proposals. And so I think that read together, those require the board to set a title for 82 that clearly distinguishes it from 31. And so in terms of the statutory basis for distinguishing, that's the basis for that. I think that the need to distinguish between preferential treatment as defined in 31 and preferential treatment as defined in 82, it's not enough to simply restate the definition. The titles really need to make clear the vastly different application that these two measures would have, particularly given that they're identical opening sentences. And I think that the language set for 82 fails to do that.
Thank you. And the word is ethnicity.
I know it was a late night last night at the Capitol. Any other questions for Mr. Solomon? Okay, thank you very much. Jessica Petcore, you're also signed up. Do you want to testify? Okay, thank you. Melissa Hart?
I just want to say a few things in support of the title set for 82. First, as to the single subject question, I think it's really clear what the subject of 82 is. The subject of 82 is non-discrimination by the state. The initiative very clearly states that it's seeking to prohibit discrimination and preferential treatment, and then it defines what preferential treatment is precisely because it's a term that's subject to many different interpretations. And it's important to have a definition so that people know what they are voting for. That's exactly the opposite of misleading or confusing. It's straightforward and clear, and says in the text, in two sentences, this is what's happening here. That actually contrasts it pretty significantly from 31, where preferential treatment is not defined and therefore is left open to confusion and is misleading. But that fight is obviously over. So I think what we're talking about here is just, is this one clear? And the answer to that is yes. As to the title set by the board 2-3 weeks ago, it seems to me that it very accurately states what the initiative does in that it tracks the language of the initiative. That's a pretty standard approach to titles. It definitely distinguishes 31 and 82. In the relatively few cases that the court has discussed this question of conflicting ballot language, the court has made clear that the language of the titles has to distinguish between conflicting or overlapping proposals, meaning that if a voter read both of the titles, they would understand that they were different. It doesn't mean that they have to understand every legal ramification of either of the titles, which is good because both of these are examples of titles in which there is likely to be a number of interpretive questions. Exactly what the meaning of preferential treatment is in 31 is likely to be the subject of judicial debate and interpretation. This is sort of the nature of a lot of these initiatives that come up. And so the question of what kind of interpretation it's going to be subject to doesn't have to be in the title. And in matter of petition on school finance, a 1994 case, the court was quite clear that the board does not have a duty to include in its summary or in its title the effect that a proposed initiative may have on other constitutional and statutory provisions. The idea is not to say these are all the ways that this is different from something else. The idea is that if you read the two initiatives, you can see that they're different, and you can see how they're different. You can see that this defines preferential treatment, the other one doesn't. Mr. Solomon suggests that if you just read the first sentence of proposed Initiative 82, you might not fully understand proposed Initiative 82. I think that's generally true for any title. If you just read the first sentence, you're likely not to understand all that the initiative is going to do. That's why titles are supposed to be relatively short and clear, and this one is. If someone reads the title, they will understand what the initiative is about. So we would ask that the board retain the title set last at its last meeting, which accurately reflected the clear and straightforward goals of this initiative.
Any questions from Ms. Hart? Mr. Domenico?
Yeah, I'm still, as you probably can guess, a little troubled with the single subject issue. And maybe the way to get at it is to, for me to play law professor and present you with some hypotheticals and see how you would react. And one may be based on, and this may be a mistake, this the animal dog cat discussion I had earlier. It does seem to me that there's a difference in if a measure came in and tried to clarify existing law to narrow a definition. As I said, if existing law said no one shall keep an animal as a pet, and people said, well, we want to be able to keep certain types of animals, and so then someone came in and said, well, we're by animal in this section we only mean tigers or bears or something like wild animals, and that would not be a problem. But this is more like doing both at the same time, both saying we will protect all animals, no animals shall be kept as pets, and then turning right around and saying by animals though we only mean this small subset. And isn't that a significant difference in the sense that a voter may be confused about whether you mean what you're saying in the first sentence, which is a broad declaratory statement, and what you're saying in the second sentence, which cuts way back on the kind of
In the example that you gave, yes, I think that would be a problem. I think if you had a law that said we're going to prohibit all of any particular behavior of every sort, we're going to prohibit having all pets of any kind as all animals of any kind as mm-hmm. pets, but we don't mean all animals, that would be confusing. What the first sentence of this initiative says preferential treatment. It doesn't say all preferential treatment of any kind no matter what. It says preferential treatment, and then immediately afterwards defines what preferential treatment is precisely because it is subject to so many different interpretations. So I think a better example using the animal thing might be something like I'm going to put a ballot initiative on the ballot that says the state of Colorado shall establish the Domenico Memorial Animal Shelter, period. Animals that can be sheltered in this facility will be dogs and cats. So the first sentence uses the word animal, but the second sentence makes it clear that, in fact, we won't have elephants there. I don't think that voters would be confused reading those two sentences together, although they might, if they never read the second sentence, think that they could bring their pig to the shelter. So I just think you're building into your assumption a definitional aspect of preferential treatment that I think is not a reasonable, it's not reasonable given the second sentence. The second sentence makes it clear that it is not all preferential treatment of any sort that you can imagine. It's this particular preferential treatment that is prohibited.
Let me ask then this. Aren't the things that are defined as preferential treatment in the second sentence aren't they typically viewed as forms of state discrimination rather than preferential treatment?
I think that's a highly contested question.
Okay.
I think lots of people would say yes and lots of people would say no, that's not. And I think that's the point, is to say this statute says the state shall not engage in discrimination or preferential treatment, meaning this kind of preferential treatment.
So adopting quotas or awarding points is not in your view, not a form of discrimination necessarily, or your view is that it's just not.
But my particular view is it's definitely not the issue here.
Well, what it's typically understood to be.
No, I think the question of what constitutes preferential treatment is a highly contested issue. I mean, actively, hotly, constantly contested issue. And that what this initiative is trying to do is to say, we're defining one set and we're saying, well, you're out. This is not going to happen in this state. We're clear on that. That's what this initiative seeks to do.
I agree with you completely on everything you just said. My question, though, is not about whether the definition of preferential treatment is contested, I guess, but whether the definition of state discrimination is contested. I mean, are there arguments made? Does any reasonable person believe that the definition of discrimination against or for discrimination doesn't include quotas or awarding points? I guess that's my question.
And again, I would say, I mean, these are just such debated topics, and what. So all I can really say about I think, yes, there's a great deal of debate about the full range of all of these questions. And so what this initiative seeks to do is to put that debate to rest with regard to a certain number of issues in this state.
So I'm just sort of thinking, I haven't really thought this through before now, but I guess my point is, it seems to me that basically you're defining preferential treatment to mean what typically is understood to mean discrimination. Is that wrong? That your definition of preferential treatment is quotas and points based solely on race or gender or any other.
I absolutely disagree with you. I think many people think that when you use the word preferential treatment, what you are talking about is quotas and point systems. I think many people believe that that is what preferential treatment constitutes. And so, again, that definition of preferential treatment, and to the extent that people think we should use those, they will vote against this. To the extent that there are people out there who believe, and I think there definitely are, that that form of preferential treatment should be used by the state, they will not vote for this measure. And to the extent that there are people who think that form of preferential treatment should not be used by the state, they will vote for this measure. And to the extent that there are people who think that form of preferential treatment is actually just discrimination, and I do think there are people who also think that, that's one of the wide range of views on the spectrum here, they will also vote for this measure. I mean, that they will think, okay, we're eliminating all of these things. And that's a wide range of views on the issue, which is why a definition is important, I think.
All right, let me ask a different hypothetical. Say someone came in with a measure that said, the first sentence said something like, the state and state entities, public entities, ability to engage in equal opportunity programs shall be preserved. And then in the second sentence it said something like, equal opportunity program is defined to be any effort that in no way takes race or gender, et cetera, into consideration. Would you have a problem with that?
Yeah, I would think impermissible catchphrase.
Equal opportunity program, but
yeah.
that's the measure, not the title. You're allowed to stick catchphrases in your measure.
So what I have a problem with, it preserves equal opportunity programs. Equal opportunity programs shall be any program.
I'm just trying to sort of flip the ideology around. Do you see what I'm saying? That defining, saying.
Do I think that would constitute a single subject? Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. It's about equal opportunity programs.
Do you think people would be unfairly confused by that? I mean,
well, again, you've got to get to a title, right? I think if you put equal opportunity programs in the title, you've got a catchphrase question. This is a hotly debated concept, which is why.
Sure, but before we get to that I would just be asking. I would think that some of your clients might object to that on the grounds that it gives people the impression in the first sentence that they're preserving basically what you're trying to preserve in this measure, and then in the second sentence basically says, no, we mean something else. We mean only equal opportunity if you're not taking race into account or gender.
Yeah. I mean, in a million different ways that just strike. There are lots of things. I would hope that they would talk to someone about trying to word it better. I mean, that just doesn't make a lot of sense as an initiative, but I don't think it's analogous to this because I think, unlike that example, where equal opportunity programs, while I think also hotly debated, is itself, it's loosey-goosey at a whole other level than preferential treatment, which has this preferential treatment is subject to a wide range of definitions. Again, that's why we define it in this initiative, to be clear what we're talking about. Equal opportunity programs I may even be subject to a wider range of definitions. And so I can't even, like, I have a hard time thinking about what I would think of that initiative, but I think it would constitute a single subject.
Okay.
This one does.
All right. I think that's all I have on single subject, at least.
Any other questions? I don't think I have any. So, thank you. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on the motion for rehearing? And Mr. Solomon, if you want to briefly respond, you're welcome to do so if you would like.
I don't have any response.
Okay. Then let me turn to board discussion on the motion for rehearing. Any discussion by the board? Mr. Domenico.
Well, as I've said, I'm still a little bit troubled by this, although I think obviously compared to whatever 61, the last version of this, obviously it's less confusing in that the narrow definition is stated in a way that's understandable, I think. It still has the same fundamental problem, which I tried to capture with my last little hypothetical, which is that the measure sort of seeks to do two different things, or says it's doing one thing and then actually doesn't do what that would typically be interpreted as meaning. Now, I understand, and I think I'm persuaded by Professor Hart's arguments that in this context, those terms are, in the first sentence, are so undefined that it doesn't quite amount to saying cat and then dog. It comes a little bit closer to saying in the first one, maybe this analogy is getting completely out of hand, but it seems a little bit closer to saying something like, we'll protect cats and dogs, and then cats and dogs is defined only to include dogs, is probably the best analogy, and that's a little troublesome to me, but I think I'm persuaded barely by Professor Hart's argument that the terms discrimination and preferential treatment are not quite as readily, they don't have as inherent a plain meaning as cat and dog, and therefore it's not quite the same as telling someone we're going to do this and then saying we're not really going to do it. It's more defining terms that really aren't well defined. I do think it's confusing, and I still don't understand why it had to use the exact same language as another measure. Seems to be inviting confusion to me unnecessarily, but it doesn't. There's not case law to me that's quite close enough that says just because we think people are going to be confused about two different measures that we can reject the second one, even though I do think there's a real danger of that. So I'm going to vote in favor of single subject again, reluctantly.
Mr. Carton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate Mr. Solomon's arguments, which I think were well stated, but I too believe that the measure has number 82 does contain a single subject, and that it's accurately reflected in the title. And I know that the statute and the case law place a duty, I think, on the title board to examine whether or not measures are surreptitious, or that they might surprise the voters or deceive the voters. But I don't think 82 does that. I think the text is sufficiently different from 31. I think in a lot of cases, and I think Mr. Domenico stated it well, that as far as the potential confusion that could arise, doesn't necessarily lock the board into not setting a title for a measure or finding a single subject. And I think oftentimes when the board discusses the potential for confusion and whether or not a measure is surreptitious, and I appreciate the arguments being made, but it really does, in my mind, more and more come down to speculation. And I feel, as one title board member, that I'm oftentimes reluctant to get into just how a particular measure will be understood by the voters, because I don't think any measure, I think any measure has the potential for being understood on different levels or misunderstood on different levels. And so I can't conclusively draw from the language of 31 or 82, and we're talking about 82 here today, confusion. And I think as the process goes along, the differences are accurately reflected in the titles of the measure, and that will come through. And so I would deny the motion.
Mr. Domenico?
Can I just say, I'm not ready to go ahead with the title yet. So I want to make sure we're split it up. I do have a problem with the title, I think, or at least want to discuss it a little bit.
Well, with respect to the single subject argument, I'm not persuaded to grant the motion for rehearing on that ground. The board really has struggled with these measures, with number 31 and 82 the first time we heard it and its predecessor, and it's not that these are easy, and there's good arguments on both sides. I think I guess to oversimplify it, I look at number 31 and number 82 as, you know, but from with respect to the single subject issue, as being very similar. They prohibit discrimination and preferential treatment. They have different concepts of the types of preferential treatment that should be prohibited, but from a single subject perspective, on balance, I think they're both qualifying as single subjects. So I would also vote to deny the motion for rehearing on the grounds of single subject. So maybe we should turn then, Mr. Domenico, to the titles, if you want to go ahead and express what your issues are.
Yeah, well, it's my fault, actually, I think. My suggestion last time was that we use the same statement of the single subject, partly because of what Mr. Hobbs just said about, I do think that these have the same basic single subject, essentially. At the same time, though, we do have an obligation to make it as clear as possible that they deal quite differently with that subject. And I think it's a disservice to both proponents of this measure and proponents of 31, which is for some reason now called 46, I guess. To not make it a little bit clearer that this is a bit narrower. And I think it could be done pretty easily just in the single subject statement, saying, not going quite as far as the petitioners seek to, but simply saying something along the lines of concerning a prohibition against certain forms of discrimination and preferential treatment by the state. That, I think, gives at least a hint that this is a bit more limited, which is, in fact, the point of it, to do basically the same thing as 31, but in a more limited way. I think there is a risk. I appreciate that the proponents appear willing to take it, but I think there's a risk based on the statute and the cases cited by Mr. Solomon. There's a real risk that this would be thrown out as it's written for failing to clarify that there's essentially a conflict between this. I mean, I know it's in there, but I don't think that's what the direction from the statutes and the court to us is, to make sure somewhere in there someone who compares has the two ballot proposals in front of them at the same time and is comparing them line by line can figure out that they're different. The point of setting a title is to give a summary to the people that explains what they're doing, and if there are two similar proposals, our obligation in the title is to try to signal that. And maybe the proponents would object to my small suggestion there, but I don't mean it. I don't see how it would harm their cause. While it would give a little bit of a signal, at least to people, that there's a difference here.
And your suggestion was to say concerning a prohibition against certain forms of discrimination?
Discrimination and preferential treatment, I'd probably include, and that's all.
You know, I really do like or support trying to distinguish the measures a little better. I guess I'd like to hear a little from the parties about what they think about that. I'm a little troubled by putting in preferential treatment, and I'm not sure.
Well, isn't it? I mean, the whole second sentence is about preferential treatment, and so it seems to me, if anything, it should be troubling that it's not mentioned at all in the first. Now, I know in 31 it was also an important part of it, and our thinking was that they're sort of two sides of the same coin or something like that, which they are in a lot of ways. But this proposal clearly seeks to say that they're not the same thing. And so, to me, again, as I've said many times, you can define subject, you can make single subjects very broad or very narrow. There are 50 ways with each measure probably to accurately reflect a single subject. And I think this in some ways does, but given that this really, the point of this measure is to say discrimination is not the same thing as preferential treatment, as some types of preferential treatment at least. And we're going to treat them differently, including a hint of that in the single subject, I don't think misstates the single subject and provides voters with a bit more useful information without prejudicing either the proponents or people who would oppose it, I don't think. But I agree. We should. I'd like to hear if there are objections or anything from anybody.
Well, let me just say that I really want to be fair. You know, we do need to keep, I think, comparing number 31 and number 82. Now, granted, with the benefit of the discussions that have transpired over multiple meetings, that doesn't mean we're bound by that, really. But, the difficulty that I'm having with including preferential treatment in the phrase preferential treatment in the expression of single subject, I think has to do with the fact that we did not do that in number 31. I mean, they both prohibit discrimination. They both prohibit preferential treatment. I mean, arguably, we could have said in number 31 number 82, maybe more cutting to the chase and saying prohibiting preferential treatment. By putting it into 82, it seems somewhat ironic, and I'll just say this somewhat crudely because I can't think of a fancy way of saying it, is that By putting it into 82, we highlight it for the measure that prohibits less preferential treatment. We make it, you know, we make it part of the single subject, but it actually prohibits less preferential treatment than number 31, and we didn't mention it there. I mean, I don't know, maybe that's not relevant, but it just kind of bothers me now to point it out.
Well, let me, that makes sense, and my more important point was really the first part about concerning certain types of discrimination, and I was going to say preferential treatment, which is the attempt to signal that it's more limited than 31. And it might even be possible to make that clearer by just saying concerning certain types of discrimination. And if I wouldn't object too strenuously if we didn't put in preferential treatment, especially if we broadened it a little bit, narrowed it in one way and broadened it a little bit by just saying an amendment concerning certain types of discrimination by the state, and then left it to the rest to explain how much is being prohibited and how much is being allowed. So I'd get rid of a prohibition against and insert certain types, which again is one of the 50 ways that I think accurately captures the what's going on and is the subject and is less specific in some ways and more specific in others.
Ms. Hart, then we'll hear from Mr. Solomon.
I really appreciate your efforts to make this clear for the voters, and I really agreed with Mr. Domenico last time that one of the ways to help the voters see that what's being presented here is a choice between two approaches to non-discrimination by the state is to have Initiative 31 and Initiative 82, whatever they may be called when they're on the ballot, start with the same language. We're talking about the question of non-discrimination by the state. These are two different approaches. The differences are clear in the text of the titles. That is, this one includes a definition, the other one does not include a definition. If you read five lines down, you see exactly what the difference is, but in fact they are dealing with the same subject, which is non-discrimination by the state, a prohibition against discrimination by the state. I do strongly object to the idea of removing the notion of prohibition from this initiative title, in large part because one of the things that has gone on with the signature collection and gathering of other forms of support for Initiative 31 is that people have been misled into believing that this was a prohibition on discrimination similar to the prohibition on discrimination contained in the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which the language of 31 directly mirrors. And so by leaving prohibition in the single subject of 31 but taking it out of the single subject of 82, that actually signals something to voters that it would be, I think, most certainly quite confusing. That people might look at the two and think, oh, if 31 is about a prohibition against discrimination, 82 somehow is not. And that actually one of the problems with trying to create any difference is that you run into that question of why. What is the difference that you're trying to express here? I think, Mr. Hobbs, your point is quite right, that if you put preferential treatment in the first line of title for 82, where it's not in the first line of the title for 31, again, it might actually cause the kind of what I would think of as the opposite problem, that people who knew that they wanted to vote for the Ward Connerly initiative might, without reading carefully, think, oh, well, clearly the one that says preferential treatment in the first clause must be the one that I want to vote for, whereas by keeping the language the same, one of the many goals of the proponents of Initiative 82, Mr. Solomon mentioned this in his brief, we've talked about it, but the desire of the proponents of 82 is to have an open and honest discussion about what should be the policy on discrimination in Colorado and what constitutes discrimination. And the way that we seek to do this in this process is we define preferential treatment such that people will stop and say, oh, wait, okay, so this is one definition of preferential treatment. What is the more that 31 is never saying out loud what it's doing, but it's doing something else. And I think that having the same language at the beginning and then prompting people to read and say, oh, here are the differences, is exactly the way to educate people, to force people to think about, well, what are the differences here? And trying to play games with the beginning of it, I think, actually risks not doing that. So I would hope that you would consider leaving them the same so that they can be better distinguished on their own terms rather than through interpretation and ambiguity created by the differences.
Let me mention one other, just put one other idea on the table just to see if it's any different, if the response would be any different. If instead we made a change, I mean, again, I do like the idea of trying to distinguish them a little better a little earlier, although I'm okay with the titles the way they are, but if we can do better, I want to do it. Would it help in line 3, when where we do mention preferential treatment, to insert there Mr. Domenico's idea and say, prohibiting the state from discriminating against or granting certain forms of preferential treatment or something like that, some kind of limiting phrase there. I'm not sure that's the right phrase, but granting certain forms of preferential treatment.
So again, you know, I don't like that. I think it creates more confusion than it cures.
Why? I mean, isn't that it completely accurate?
No. Part of what I don't like about it, the point, again, this initiative defines preferential treatment to mean a certain thing. By saying certain forms of preferential treatment, in fact, that buys into Mr. Domenico's assertion that everyone would understand preferential treatment to mean the broad scope of things. And so by saying this only prohibits certain forms, then it's suggesting that we agree that preferential treatment means a lot more than this. And I think part of the reason that the proponents of 82 want to put this out there is exactly because, and again, we just disagree. I mean, Mr. Domenico and I obviously disagree about what preferential treatment is. I think lots of people do. And the concern that we have is that by not defining preferential treatment, Amendment 31 captures, is confusing and misleading and surreptitious and surprising and all that, because it captures not only people who think that preferential treatment means a really broad swath of things, but also what I think is the more typical view about preferential treatment, which is that people think preferential treatment means giving someone 20 points because they're black. And so that people will read 31 and think, oh, yeah, I don't like preferential treatment, and they won't realize that actually preferential treatment is being defined to mean this whole host of other things that they do like. So this is seeking to say, this is what we mean by preferential treatment. Once you put the word certain forms in there, it's suggesting that we agree preferential treatment is actually everything, but we're only limiting this. But that's not what many people believe. It's not what the proponents of 82 believe. So that's my concern with sticking certain forms in there, as I think I do believe it buys into a particular view that is not the view of the proponents, and I submit is not the view of a majority of people.
Well, other than that last phrase, I think I agree with everything you said. It's certainly not something that everyone agrees on. There's, I'm sure, a large group of people who think preferential treatment, even if it weren't defined, means exactly what you say it means. The problem is it's not my personal view of what preferential treatment means. It means, the concern I have is that essentially every court that's interpreted similar language has said, when it's not defined, has said this applies more broadly than you're saying. And it's not just my personal view, it's the view of essentially everybody who's interpreted this, that while certainly not everyone agrees, the best interpretation of an undefined use in this context of the phrase preferential treatment is broader than what you're addressing, which is the exact point of bringing this, right? I mean, is because you're concerned that without that definition, people will be
And I believe,
confused.
Actually, that when you refer to what, when courts have interpreted similar language, it's important to keep in mind that what courts have been interpreting is language in other state statutes with the accompanying background legislative history and other interpretive guides in those states for what that language means. So absolutely, I believe that although it has not made clear a lot of the time, the proponents of Initiative 31 have, which is Prop 209 and 2 in Michigan, right, that they wish for a very expansive definition of preferential treatment, and that courts interpreting the language that they put on the ballot in that state and then that they say this is what we mean, have said, okay, well, given that you put this language forward, this is what you mean. I think it would be very problematic if we started to say, therefore, everyone agrees that this is what preferential treatment means. That's, again, part of what we're trying to do here is to stop and say, wait, let's talk about what preferential treatment means. A lot of people don't believe that's what preferential treatment means. So let's not just assume that that's what it means. And let's not allow an undefined term into our state constitution that could mean one thing or could mean another thing. Let's have a conversation about what it means. And so, again, I'm resistant to kind of buying the other definition when, in fact, I'm trying to, and the group I represent is trying to say this is the definition that we think people will support, that we think people believe, that we think expresses a strong principle concerning a prohibition against discrimination by the state. I feel like we've drifted back to the single subject question. I completely agree that the most important thing here is to make it clear, is to have titles that don't conflict, as you suggested, Mr. Domenico. I wouldn't say I'm willing to take the risk that the state court throws it out. That would be a nightmare, given the lateness of the season. I don't think that they will, because as I read, again, a really limited number of cases about this idea of ballot initiatives conflicting, I think the court has said, on the three occasions it's talked about it, from what I can find, it has said the language of the titles has to make clear the differences. The language of the titles in these two, the titles are long in a way, but they're short in a way too. The language of the titles make clear what the difference is. If you read the whole title for both, you see that one has a definition of preferential treatment, one doesn't. One has this BFQ, one doesn't. That you can go through and see the differences. They're right there on the face of the titles.
Well, Ms. Hart, maybe I misunderstood some of the discussion between you and Mr. Domenico earlier, but so forgive me for asking this question, but it seemed like the difference between the central difference between number 31 and number 82 is that number 31 takes a broader view of preferential treatment, or
just
number
82 doesn't define it at all.
Right. Whereas number 82 has a definition that is more limiting than it could be. I mean, it could be, your definition could have defined preferential treatment to be a broader thing.
Yes. Sure.
And so since number 31 doesn't limit it, arguably it is a broader class than number 82. I mean, just fundamentally, it just seems like that is the difference between the two measures.
Well, by not defining itself, number 31 allows itself to be marketed as one thing and then used as another. I mean, it doesn't define it. That doesn't necessarily mean it's broader. It means it may ultimately be interpreted as and argued as broader, but it can also be argued as narrower, which is one of the things, again, that is disturbing about it and misleading about it. 82 is not misleading because it includes a definition. So it's more limited in the sense that it's specific. Yes. And I think more limited in the sense that we can all take notice of the fact that the proponents of 31 will, regardless of how their initiative is marketed, ask for it to be interpreted later as something very, very broad.
Any other questions? I want to give Mr. Solomon an opportunity to respond to this discussion also. So, Mr. Solomon,
with your permission, Ms. Corey would like to respond.
Sure.
And I'd like to speak briefly.
Okay.
Thank you for your time this morning. I just wanted to start out by saying I don't think we're here to rehash 31. That has been properly approved by the board, and what we're really here to talk about today is a title specific to this initiative in question. You know, we're hearing a lot of discussion this morning about whether we should have a broader interpretation or more narrow interpretation of what preferential treatment means. And what I would advocate is we have a more specific definition. And I think that case law across the country and legislative history allows us to do that. If we look at the cases, the landmark cases relating to preferential treatment, those being Bakke coming out of the University of California in the 70s, the Michigan decisions coming out of the Supreme Court in the earlier part of this decade, we see that the specific language of quotas or awarding points are not allowable, are not okay. But what we do have, based on what the Supreme Court has said, is that race and gender, ethnicity, national origin, all of those protected classes we see here are allowed to be considered. Race and gender and all of those can be used as one of many factors or multiple factors in admissions decisions and highway contracting and government employment. So what I would ask the board to do when considering the title is to be specific. What does this allow? And it allows for those protected characteristics to be given preferential treatment in making those decisions. And under Colorado's, the Colorado Commission on Higher Education, there's a clear system established for institutions of higher education through an admissions window where those factors are allowed, and thus applicants who possess those factors are given preferential treatment. I think that that's all I had. If you had any specific questions.
So, I wasn't quite sure I followed. Are you suggesting that the titles ought to more... The title to number 82 should be more explicit about the actual effect of the measure?
I am saying that, and I think we have a real opportunity to do that right now. And I would advocate a title that says allowing for race, sex, color, ethnicity, or national origin to be used as a factor in, you know, we would have to talk about specific language as far as hiring, contracting, education, something along those lines. That's specifically what this is geared toward. The Supreme Court has already established that quotas, point systems are not permissible, but that this one of many factors approach is allowed. And in the vernacular of the 21st century, that's how people understand it. And that is going to be the defining difference between the first initiative, which has already been approved by this board, and this current pending initiative. That, to me, is the only way that we can reconcile the two, the only way we can properly address the inevitable confusion. And Professor Hart discussed, she talks a lot about voter confusion, and that should be important to everybody in this room, and I think that this is the only way we can help prevent that come Election Day.
So going back to the question I'd asked earlier, it sounds like you would agree that that number 31 takes a broad, both measures prohibit preferential treatment, but number 31 takes a broader view of that prohibition than number 82.
Well, I would argue that this initiative allows for preferential treatment, and that's a debate we can have in the coming months, obviously, based on your vote just now. That's not a debate you want to have right here. Okay. But what we can do is establish clearly what this would allow for, and that's for those characteristics to be considered as one of many factors.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Solomon?
I think the only point that I would add is that 82, in my mind at least, is really both more and less than a prohibition. It prohibits certain forms of preferential treatment, but it also attempts to preserve the authority of the state to remedy past discrimination through other methods, and attempts to constitutionalize and clarify existing laws. And I think that these are, you know, things that have been discussed by the proponents, and they're things that belong in the title, because they're elements of what the measure is trying to do. And I think those three pieces are really what distinguish 82 from 31. I think 31 is more than just, or 82 is just more than just another version of 31 that uses a narrower definition. 82 really has some other goals that aren't really part of what 31 is trying to do. And I think it's important to see those reflected in the title. And I'm happy to respond to any questions you have.
Mr. Domenico.
Can you, Do you have any authority that clearly tells us that it's, I guess, either direction on this question? Somewhere in this title, the difference between this and 31 is expressed, basically on line 5 and 6. My question is that enough, as Professor Hart has suggested? Is it enough that the difference is expressed in there? Or is there authority that says it has to be highlighted or somehow made clearer than simply being in there when you've got a conflicting or potentially conflicting measures?
As Professor Hart pointed out, we're in some respects on fresh ground here. This is not, as far as I've been able to tell, an issue that has been considered extensively by the court or even by the title board. So you know, ultimately, I think that a question for the board is this language sufficient to distinguish? And you know, I would refer to INRI proposed initiated constitutional amendment concerning fair treatment 2, which is 877 Civic Second 329. And there the Colorado Supreme Court says, what is prohibited are conflicting ballot titles which fail to distinguish between overlapping or conflicting proposals. And that, frankly, is the best authority I have for you. The Colorado Supreme Court has said that the board needs to distinguish between proposals that either conflict or that overlap. And I think that 82 and 31 either conflict or overlap, depending on how you interpret them, but clearly, cross each other's scope to a certain degree. And so the board then needs to clearly distinguish between the two. And I'm not, in my opinion, the definitional reference in line 5 in the title is not sufficient to clearly distinguish between the two of them.
Okay, thanks. I think I agree with you, and I also agree that we're sort of on our own here. This is more based on kind of our general obligation to write something that the voters will reasonably understand what they're doing. And when there's a competing measure, usually when there's conflicting measures, I mean, there were the two same-sex marriage measures, I think, on last time. It's not very hard to make it clear, because one says A is prohibited and the other one says A is allowed, and that on the face of them it's clear what the conflict is. Here, and this is part of why I have troubles getting past the single subject confusion surreptitious standard, it's not clear from the measures themselves, really. Just by expressing what the measure does, I don't think does a very good job of telling people what the conflict is. I mean, for example, in the same-sex marriage ones, the idea I expressed that Ms. Hart agreed with of using the same single subject, that they both concern same-sex marriage, might work better than it does here, because you very quickly get into saying one allows it, and I think on those we actually said one is a prohibition on same-sex marriage and one is a provision allowing it. But we could have just said they both concern same-sex marriage, or they both concern a definition of marriage or something like that, and that wouldn't have been a problem. Here, though, where you say a prohibition against discrimination by the state, I guess that's fine, but if we're going to leave that, then I think it's got to be more clear how this is different, even though it is in there. And I don't think there's any obligation that we reference the other measure to make it that clear. I don't think there's any, even though it is already, I think, no, it's not. Yeah. Even though it's pretty certain to be on the ballot.
There's a legal chance.
Yeah. So I don't think we have to do that, and I don't think we can quite go as far as Ms. Corey suggested about getting into what it means as a legal matter in terms of interpreting it and saying, well, this leaves open the use of these types of programs, because that requires far too much interpretation and our putting our own legal analysis into it. But I do think we need to do a bit more than this does. And if everyone is against changing the concerning language, which I think is the easiest way to signal it, then I think we need to change it later.
We've got to get it
on the record.
So I'm sitting here looking at this and thinking, again, I mean, I really don't want to end up in a situation where the Supreme Court says these aren't sufficiently distinguished. I don't think we will end up there, but it would be a real bummer.
Took care of that.
Is it your view that having the beginning, the first clause, different from the first clause of 31 is sufficient to distinguish, that the issue is simply people should be able to read the first clause and know how they're different? Because as Mr. Domenico says, there are lots of ways to word the first clause. So I would, you know, I think at one point last time we talked about, you know, an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning the state's non-discrimination obligation. There are other ways you could phrase the same thing if the goal simply is to have it be different from Initiative 31's opening language. But I'm not. Is that the issue? Because
that's part. I mean,
or for example, you know, even though I disagree that I have a principled reasons for disagreeing with putting in certain forms of preferential treatment, but if that seemed to you to solve the problem, I'm not. I would rather have a title that would go through than agonize about whether everyone's going to agree with me that's not quite a correct statement of what we're doing.
Yeah, and our obligation is a little bit different than your calculation of the risk of being overturned, because the court gives deference to some degree to what we do, especially on title setting. But just because the court gives us deference, I don't think we should interpret that as meaning whatever we can get away with, we should do. I mean, we still have sort of an overriding obligation to do the best we can, and I don't think this is quite the best we can. And the suggestions you made, I think, are the sorts of things that get us that would make me comfortable that we're giving enough of a hint that to have done our job. I don't know which of the various options I prefer. Mr. Hobbs, I think, had some good ones.
Yeah, I'm uncomfortable at this point changing the single subject, expression of the single subject, although I'm pretty comfortable with doing something in line three along the lines that I talked about. And again, just the simple purpose of trying to distinguish earlier. You have to read pretty far before you notice a difference, and even then it's fairly subtle. I mean, if you have them side by side, I mean, and you'll have them on a ballot, but you really have to compare and contrast. I just think it makes it easier to put something in line three, even though I think it does make proponents uncomfortable, but it at least helps distinguish the measures a little better. And I don't know, Mr. Carton, whether you have any preferences.
I think we had a good discussion when we set the title. I think the title is accurately crafted. I think that the standard, which admittedly is not a bright line here in 14106,
and that Mr. Solomon has argued, ballot titles shall be brief and shall not conflict with those selected for any petition previously filed for the same election. I don't think these conflict. I do think the language on lines 5 and 6 do adequately distinguish the titles between 31 and 82. If the board wants to put certain forms of discrimination, add the language certain forms, and the proponent is amenable to that addition, I personally don't think that really further clarifies the titles or adds a signal earlier in the title that there's a difference between the measures. But so that's where I'm kind of at. I'm satisfied with it as it is, but and I do think we've done our job. And I think that, you know, to the extent that, and Mr. Solomon's argued, I think, well, and I think Ms. Hart's argued that you know, there's no real clear, we don't have a lot of examples here to rely on, but there are differences, and I think the key difference is stated in the title, and that would preserve the title, again, if it were challenged.
Ms. Hart?
I just want to be clear again. I mean, my goal here is not to confuse voters. My goal is to make things more clear to voters. I agree. I think this title does that. I think it's very clear what the differences are. Again, I still actually agree with what Mr. Domenico said last time, which is that having them the same until they're different, I mean, that's the easiest way to see the difference. The difference is right there. And that this makes it really clear what the differences are, that as soon as you start to muck around with the language, you actually open up more potential for confusion, not less potential for confusion. And I think this meets the standards in the statute and the standards in the court's decision, not only what you can get away with, but actually what your obligation is to the voters is satisfied by this title.
Well, I guess I'm willing to agree with my arguments last time about the single subject statement, if everybody else wants to keep that part, even though I would probably change it if it were just up to me a little bit. But I do think that even agreeing completely with everything Professor Hart just said, the place where the measure starts mucking around with the language is in limiting the definition of preferential treatment. And so Mr. Hobbs' suggestion in line 3 of simply inserting certain forms of before preferential treatment, I think, is a signal that this is more narrow than Amendment 31 seems on its face. And I perfectly understand what Ms. Hart's saying, that in some ways buys into one definition of preferential treatment that they disagree with. But the fact of the matter is that definition, while I certainly agree not everyone shares it, is at the very least a reasonable one, and the more likely interpretation of an undefined preferential treatment is broader than this definition. And given that the point of this measure is to define preferential treatment more narrowly than proponents fear it would otherwise be defined, I think it's important to, when we start talking about preferential treatment, give at least a small, slight hint of that purpose of treating preferential treatment narrowly. Now, that they argue that that's not just narrow, but is the proper interpretation of it, which is fine. But and if these had come up in the opposite order, with this coming first and 31 coming first, we'd be having trouble, I'm sure, figuring out how to make clear that 31 is different than 61, and the title of 31 would probably look very different or somewhat different than it did. But that's how this came up, and our obligation is to deal with what we've got in front of us, which is a measure that seeks to, in fact, conflict with another measure. And we've got I think Mr. Hobbs' suggestion is probably the least we can do to make that as clear, make that clear.
And if you make that in the form of a motion, I'll support it. I think it's maybe the most we can do, but that's where we maybe meet.
Well, okay.
I'll
move then that we, on line 3, between granting and preferential treatment, insert the words certain forms of.
I'll second that. That clause would read prohibiting the state from discriminating against or granting certain forms of preferential treatment to any individual or group, et cetera. Any further discussion? Mr. Carton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I just want to reiterate, for the reasons I've stated, and I think for a lot of the discussion when we really originally set the title, I'm just not sure, under the circumstances, I'm persuaded by the proponent's position to maintain the title as originally drawn. And again, I think as written, it doesn't conflict, and I don't think that that language will add anything. So I'll be a no.
Okay. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
That motion carries 2-1. Any further discussion? Back to the motion for rehearing. If not, is there a motion to, I think the motion would be to deny the motion for rehearing, except to the extent that the board has amended the titles.
So moved.
I'll second. And understood that the change that was made in line 3 would also be made in the ballot title and submission clause that comes after line 11. And that simply puts the title in the form of a question. So the motion is deny the motion for rehearing, except to the extent the board change the titles. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
Nope.
That motion carries 2-1. That concludes action on number 82. The time is 9:32 a.m. Let's take about a 5-minute break, 5 or 10-minute break.